Beyond is sponsored by the Malone Society, the permanent utility of original texts. Go to malonesociety.com for more information. Hello and welcome to the Beyond podcast and today's chat about a production of Massacre at Paris by Christopher Marlowe. And it's been a thin year this year to chat about anything in terms of performance because we just haven't had that many plays out there. So I was delighted to see this appearing, and where it is and who's doing it is really, really exciting and interesting. So I'm really delighted to have this wonderful guest with me to talk about the show. So my wonderful guest, who are you and what is your purpose in life?
I'm Stuart McGill. I'm director of Playbox Theatre at the Dream Factory in Warwick, which is a company essentially working with young people from as young as 2 up to their early 20s. So the company covers a wide range of disciplines, skills, and training. Some people training to go into the profession, others who come because they enjoy the social and creative side of it. So yes, a lot of young people work with Playbox, and the company was started in 1986 by Mary King, who's still co-director. I joined much later, and it's flourishing. We've got our own theatre here in Warwick. Thanks to the National Lottery, we're able to build. And here we are, able to challenge ourselves with strange and diverse repertoires.
Yes, and I have to say, looking back at some of the plays you've staged in the past, you're challenging your performers really from the off with some really interesting works. And this is a wonderful text to be choosing to do with young people. What drew you to Massacre at Paris?
It's a really good question. One of the opening plays of this theatre back in early 2000s, we did Dr. Faustus. And we were very happy with it. We have a company within Playbox, I shouldn't say it, but it's called the Shakespeare Young Company. But one of the things that company does is not only look at the named playwright, but it looks at the contemporaries of the named playwright and what was going on at the time. And the whole idea of Elizabethan and Jacobean popular theatre. And the Massacre at Paris is one that one hears about. One can read a little bit about it, but it never seems to be done. It never seems to be spoken of in the same breath as Edward II, Tamburlaine, Faustus. And yet within that play, there are prototypes of all these characters and many more. And I was drawn to it because it was written within the living memory of people who had been victims at the massacre. And Elizabeth's court at the time was full of exiles from Paris. Her court was well peopled with them. And I thought, well, this is like writing a play today about events that happened in living memory for people in the show. So let's see what happens when you juxtapose almost a documentary of the Elizabethan era with contemporary actors who probably don't know about the origins of the religious wars, and just see what we can do and make a show. Make a show. And that was the fundamental thing.
It has had a few productions here and there, but not a vast number. A thing that puts a lot of people off is probably that its relative shortness, the sense that there are various questions about how the text ended up as it did. It's very short for the period. Has it been cut down? Has there been something lost? What's the transmission there? But I would say for that kind of text that there is actually an opportunity there for producers to say, actually, no, this is cutting everything down to its essentials, but it also gives you room to say, well, what else can we do with this?
Well, yeah.
What is going on? That's the sort of my next question. What are you going to be able to do with that text as it is?
And certainly working on the floor with it. And we've got a text. We've got a version of it that we received from a friend at the University of Birmingham. So it is a variant of the text. But what you find when you're working on the floor is that it was a fragmented text. We don't know. There is no definitive text. There's no, like with Faustus, you have an A and a B text. So you take your choice, but, you know, it's pretty clear which one you're using. With this, there are so many fragmented bits and actors' memories and eyewitness memories that cobbled together and put down as part of the show, that when you're on the floor, you realize you're dealing with some characters. You don't really know who they are, where they come from, or where they go, because they vanish. So one of our jobs is to try and fill in the gaps without adding text, but trying to break down what we've got and find a through line. And also, I mean, it's going to be, it's very difficult. It's very difficult for a contemporary audience to understand the complexity of religion. So in a way, we've used metaphorical concepts for that whole religious thing. But because there is no text, it's an open invitation to say, this is a group of young performers taking Marlowe today and transmitting it to an audience today. I'm making it into a show which we hope they will enjoy and also reflect upon, because the more you work on the play, the more the contemporary issues stare you in the face and see what happens. And hopefully, for people who've never come across Marlowe, and certainly not come across this play, I never have in performance, it will illuminate, again, a certain style of playing. And what I keep saying to the company is, although we're in a more contemporary dress, we're in a more contemporary setting, we want our audience to have, as far as we can get, and as far as we know, an Elizabethan theatre experience. We want them to smell the sweat, feel the noise, feel that whole atmosphere. Why was it so popular? Why did the box office do so well? Why did they keep bringing it back? What is there about the play that will excite today? So that's really how we've taken it and why I wanted to do it. And I wanted to make a show with it. I didn't want to be a reverential Marlowean with it. I wanted to make a show that would excite and thrill, horrify and resolve.
Because it's a play very much of two halves. I mean, in the sense that the first half is very much massacre orientated. Yeah. And in that sense, you know, I don't think even an audience who don't understand, you know, don't have a deep knowledge of the civil wars of France, which is incredibly complicated. And I've never fully really got to grips on who's king when, doing what and why and which faction.
And were they all called Henry or, you know.
Far too many kings with the same name. And then the second half is sort of stretched out over the aftermath of that. But you have, on top of that, you've got these very strong characters. You know, you've got the Guise, and that's the other title for the play. You know, that's one of your focal points that people will be drawn to, because he's got this enormous opening salvo from
Absolutely. Yeah, a confession, a shared aesthetic with the audience. They are there. I mean, as with the nameless Richard III, as with Tamburlaine, as with Faustus, the character is communicating to the audience their ambitions, setting out their story. This is what I'm going to do. This is how I'm going to achieve it. And come with me. Share the journey. Share it with me. Watch what I do. Some of it you might enjoy. Some of it I might horrify you. But I'm with you. And you don't, in discussion about Marlowe's characters, you hear a lot about Tamburlaine and Faustus and Edward. But you don't very often hear people talking about the part of the Guise and the challenge for the actor. So again, it's a good role for someone to have. And certainly there is not, that we haven't found a model that the actor can say, oh, I saw so-and-so do it. Let me look at how that actor played the role. Let me see what I can glean from that. It's very much fresh material. It's that old thing. It's almost as though that play has just landed and we're trying to make some sense of it.
So you're relatively early in the process of rehearsals. It's still a way in the future at the time of recording. How's it going? Do you have a sort of process or a system that you work
on? Yeah, we're on day four and we're working towards, on Friday afternoon of this week, so we're recording this on Wednesday afternoon. We're working in quite a small studio because the theatre that we've got here is being used for another event this week. So we're working on the scenes in studio format for Friday afternoon to do a loose, very rough cut of the whole thing. And we're up to the point today, we just finished, I mean, it was so hot, you couldn't stay in the room anymore. We've just finished with Navarre in power and hunting down Henry and the Guise. So we're way past the massacre and we're looking at the aftermath and how the world changes and how the pendulum swings the other way from the Catholics to the Protestants. We're spending a long time looking at the text. I mean, there's some very obscure passages. Yeah. There's a whole section where the character Ramus, John Ramus, who was a real-life person, Protestant scholar, he's challenged by Guise for his beliefs and a lot of obscure references to the organum and this and that. And we tried to paraphrase that into language that the audience can understand. Like, this man challenges the way we practice religion rather than the specifics. So we're trying to look at that and give ourselves a way of adapting the religious wars so that the audience will understand the context of the play within a contemporary context. So we've talked about Protestants, Catholics. We've talked about Israel, Palestine. We've talked about Hitler's Nazis and the Jewish question, and looking at history and how a nation or how a group can treat another, and what is the psychology behind that? How can you do it? And so it's turning out, I had no idea it would turn into such a bleak, dark comedy. We're playing it that some of the butchering sequence are very, very funny, so that when they turn and you're suddenly in a reality context, which is horrifying. So we want to take the audience on that kind of journey where they can't really believe what they're seeing. It's so horrendous. But by divorcing it a little bit from a reality, if that makes sense.
Yes, no, I think it does. And there is always a question of tone and of where humour lies. And it's not necessarily humour we're not talking about jokes. We're talking about, you know, how are certain scenes and certain absurdities when staged and extremities, and what is an audience's response to it, to these extreme acts, especially when it's keyed up in quite cynical terms. The way the Guise talks about what's going to happen later on, early in the play, it's not coming from a place of deep conviction per se. It's coming from about power politics, and then what is the result?
Yes, I mean, it's the climb to power for him, and it's the climb to power for Catherine, and the way they manipulate people and the way they manipulate the religious context to suit their own ends. And at one point, Catherine uses the analogy that the Protestants are like wounded deer. Again, it's this idea of using your opponents or trying to convince the crowd that you are justified in slaughtering them because they are not human. They are animals and should be perceived as animals. And I referred to the film Schindler's List when we were talking on Monday, and the way the Ralph Fiennes character, I can't remember what his name was now in the film, but he refers to the Jewish inmates at Auschwitz. He says, they are vermin. They are not human. They are vermin. And I think what we've tried to say is, if psychologically that is your perspective of your foe, then it's easier to do what you do because you don't recognize their humanity. And that's been one of the debates. We spend a lot of time really throwing a lot of discussions around it, how such a thing could happen and how could it spread across France, but also how it can happen today and spread again without being, you know, politically taking sides. I mean, we just say, this is the situation. This is what happens. And these are the people in control. And what is their aim? What is their objective? Is it religion or is it something else? So it makes the play incredibly contemporary in discussion. But we've resisted the temptation to say, oh, right, we're set it in Northern Ireland. We're set it in a mythical Eastern state, but it looks a bit like Gaza. We didn't want to do anything like that. We wanted to create our own distinctive world.
So it's coming up in the future at the time we're recording, but where and when can people go and see it?
It's on in October from 15th to the 17th. We're only doing 3 performances, which I think is a shame. But again, you know, it's not going to be box office magnets.
Well, you never know. If we can induce demand, maybe you can add some dates.
Well, absolutely. We can always reschedule it and bring it back. It's at the Dream Factory in Warwick, which is the home of Playbox Theatre. And tickets through our website or from Ticket Source. It's staged in a traverse format. We wanted the audience to be absolutely up close with the actors so that they can share one space and share dialogue. So at certain points, the audience are encouraged to applaud a coronation, applaud a wedding, share the confessions of certain characters, especially Guise, who will tell them what he's going to do. And they're therefore complicit in the action and hopefully will feel a little bit of guilt when they see what their companion is getting up to. But it's kind of, for us, an experiment to see if that play can stand today, can speak today, and why on earth has it been ignored, really, apart from scholars and a few very brave, maybe university companies and the odd special project. Why has it never been in a repertoire? Why has the National Theatre never done it? Why has the RSC not done it in the Swan, which would be, you know, an ideal place for it? Why has it not been done? And yet we get countless Faustus, we get lots of Tamburlaines, Duke of Malta pops up now and again, but no Massacre at Paris. I just want to see what happens, and I'd like audiences to discover it with us.
Well, I'm really looking forward to it. I haven't booked yet. And I do know some of our team are on their way. I do know some people who've already booked for it. Do you have any, you know, future early modern outside of the canon, shall we say, that you might be looking at in the future? Or you don't have to have anything programmed, but anything that tempts you going forward?
Yeah, well, there are a few that tempts me. I don't do as much as I used to now with the company. So I'd maybe do one or maximum of two productions a year and some of the professional training. I'd like to get my teeth into the Spanish tragedy. I would like to do that. Nothing like sort of tackling the prototype. And I'm also very interested next year in looking at Calderon, Life is a Dream.
Oh, yes, yes.
Again, with a parallel to the obvious Hamlet, which I shouldn't mention.
Oh, well, obviously you mean Kidd's original version of Hamlet, so it's fine, yeah.
The Hamlet, yeah, that's exactly what I mean, Robert, yes. Yes, so I'd like to look at those two. We've done Webster, we've done Duchess of Malfi, we've done The White Devil, but Webster, I always find Webster is worth going back to. So I spend a lot of time really looking at the early modern and the Greeks, because more and more now, the Greeks seem to be speaking to us today, as is reflected by the number of productions that are currently on. So yeah, I'm looking at that. But yeah, maybe Life is a Dream might be up next. Very different.
Oh, very.
I think I'll have had my fill of slaughtering at the end of this.
Well, I say we're very much looking forward to seeing that. All the links will be in the show description, and we hope maybe we'll do a follow-up on this further down the line. But otherwise, all that remains, thank my wonderful guests for being wonderful. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much indeed for your interest. Thank you.
Beyond is sponsored by the Malone Society. The Malone Society is dedicated to textual scholarship in late medieval and early modern drama. It publishes editions of early printed and manuscript texts of plays, plus collections of documentary material relating to the performance and reception of early drama, offers research fellowships, grants and prizes, and supports symposia and performances. For more details, visit malonesociety.com.